Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Sudeikis.
And I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to AnCast. We've got a pretty good show this week. We're actually taping this segment after we did the interview with Eric Sherman, which you'll hear in a little bit, and I think it turned out pretty well. so that'll be fun. How have you been?
I've been, the usual busy self. I did manage to watch a few things this week, both live action and otherwise.
What'd you get around to?
Well, live action wise, I watched Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
I've got that from Netflix. I have not gotten to it yet.
I really like it. It is a fucking weird movie.
Yeah, that was the whole selling yes. point. Plus, it has Nicolas Cage in it, so yeah.
This is probably the best Nicolas Cage has been in years, because he is so good at being just balls out insane.
Yeah.
And this character is balls out insane, and most of the movie is him just being a really bad lieutenant, hence the name, with really good intentions, trying to solve a murder of a big family, and right after post-Katrina, and basically all the rest of the characters just reacting to him with kind of a "what the fuck is up with this guy" sort of thing,
yeah,
which never happens in movies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to checking it out. I mean, I like most of Werner Herzog's catalog, and he's been sort of phoning it in the last couple of years. Did you ever see Rescue Dawn?
No.
Yeah, not great. Not as good as his documentary on the subject. so that'll be interesting to see just a straight narrative and see how it goes. But anime-wise, I checked out the Blu-ray of Dragon Ball Kai.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
Well, it looks great. It's native 1080p, so this is not an upscale. The original Dragon Ball footage has been remastered here. It is very old animation, and it really, like, it's old janky television animation from the early 90s. So the show itself doesn't look phenomenal or anything. It's an old cartoon, but there's
it's sketchy old line art.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, exactly. But there's fresh Dragon Ball animation for the opening sequence. Which, you know, I wish they'd have just remade the entire series looking like that, because it looks great. It's very fluid, it's well animated, the character designs are real solid, it looks so much better than the actual show. It's kind of embarrassing, actually. But they did a good job on the Blu-ray, you get 13 episodes. I don't know how much of it I'll really watch. I got through the first, like, three or four, and it's an entertaining kids show, but it is very much a kids show, and I don't know that I really want to dedicate that much time to it, you know? Not to slag it off or anything, it's a quality kids show, but I think One Piece is much more sophisticated, much more fun, much more, at least for my dollar, more entertaining. So if I'm going to watch a long-running, shonen slugfest, it's going to be One Piece.
You know, I have never really gotten into Dragon Ball. Even in my earliest days, in otaku, it bored the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it certainly has mainstream appeal, obviously, so that's good, and I hope they sell a million of these, but I don't know. For me personally, like I said, there's only really space in my anime diet for one long-running shonen thing. I don't think I can handle more than that. What anime did you get around to?
Well, I got around to, here's an old one that I just never saw. It's called Arion.
How do you spell that?
It's a 1986 feature, really well-animated, gorgeous feature film directed by Yoshikazu Yasuhiko. Yasuhiko is a guy that anime fans know, even if they don't know. He's the guy that he was a Sunrise stalwart. He was one of the main designers behind a ton of the Gundam franchise, including the new Gundam Unicorn. He is one of the guys behind Dirty Pair. He directed Venus Wars. This is his other big feature film from the 80s. And even though people always mentioned it, I'd never seen it. It just seemed to never show up anywhere.
Just so people know, how do you spell the title?
A-R-I-O-N.
Okay. I've never heard of it, like, ever.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous film, and it takes place, it's Greek mythology, basically. It's a story of, I'm not even going to get into the Greek mythology of it, because I am an absolute flunky when it comes to Greek mythology. Needless to say, son of one of the big gods goes to war to, you know, fight against tyranny, yada, yada, yada. Story is not anything that anyone hasn't seen a million times, but it's one of those films that it's so well animated and so accessible to Western audiences, seemingly, because of the Greek, because of all the Greek influence, that why did no one ever bring it out here? And I think I know why.
Why was that?
The first reel of the film has the main character as a little kid, and to be historically accurate, you know, he was living in poverty with a blind mother, you know, as a peasant, basically, and he's little kid running around naked. Anatomically correct, and in ways that would be impossible to edit around.
Unlicensed that shall remain.
Yes, I could just see the business affairs meeting where they popped in that grainy VHS screener, saw the little kid penis, and went, nope, eject.
Yeah, the only way you'd pull that off is if there were actually like a Criterion Collection equivalent for anime. That's the only way that you'd be able to properly contextualize that without somebody immediately rejecting it.
Right.
So that's interesting.
Well, there's one other major reason too. The main love interest in the movie is his twin sister. And although that's totally in fitting with biblical times and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There is one part where he literally goes, I don't care that she's my sister. I'm in love with her. And, you know, big crowd of warriors that are following him goes, yeah. And it's just never an issue from there on out.
That sounds really interesting, though. I mean, it, as a piece of history, what is it? What's the style like? Like, does it look like 80s anime or?
Yeah, kind of. But it's like really high budget 80s anime. This was Sunrise at near the creative peak. So this was like the same era as, you know, all the best of Gundam. It looks as good as Venus Wars, if not better.
Is it?
And it's aged better because it's not, you know, 80s sci-fi.
Dare you say it's a better film than Venus Wars?
Well, it is. Venus Wars had a pretty pretty confused narrative. This is a pretty cut and dry story that is exactly a Greek epic.
Right.
And it works.
Just with all the stuff they usually sanitize out left in.
Right. Exactly. This is a historically accurate Greek epic that would offend modern sensibilities.
Yeah, I think if you actually just straight animated most Greek myths, there's so much like horrible like rape and stuff in it that, you know, incestuous rape on top of that rape. I don't think you can really pull it off. I don't think.
Well, there's no rape in this, but.
Right.
But yeah, that's one of the reasons I never really got into Greek mythology, because it's just, most of it just seems so random and pointless. It almost seems like stories concocted on the fly as an excuse for being caught with a farm animal.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like, no, this isn't a cow. This is Persephone. She was she was transformed by Zeus.
That's a good point. I mean, I've always been fascinated by it. I like, anytime there's somebody's playing around in that particular world, it's usually fairly interesting. So I'm not against it, but yeah, that sounds interesting. The thing that we both decided to watch, and I think this was sort of mandatory, Funimation started streaming the insanely popular Hitalia, Axis Powers. I'm curious to know, Justin, what did you think of this show?
In the immortal words of Roger Ebert, I hated, hated, hated this movie. Hated it. Not a movie, but you get my drift.
Right. Okay.
Here's the thing. I don't understand what anybody with an ounce of intelligence sees in this. And I know there's a lot of Hitalia fans, and I'm sure a good number of them are intelligent, rational people. I totally understand why a show like this would appeal to absolute idiots.
Holy shit.
Because it's, rather than being outright humor with anything intelligent to say sociopolitically, or historically, it's kind of this bizarre Pavlovian response sort of humor where it's just like, oh, there is Italy. I think I know what an Italy is. Oh, yes, he says pasta a lot. I get it. Italy and pasta.
Yeah.
It's kind of like date movie and epic movie, you know, those things where it's just this random mishmash, almost this Dadaist explosion of bizarre internet memes, except replace internet memes with Japanese racism, and you pretty much have Hatalia.
Yeah, I would not at all call it Dadaist, because that would suggest that it's intentionally like it is, and I don't agree with you, really, that it's doing what it is intentionally in order to destroy anime. So I wouldn't call it Dadaist. It's not that sinister. Well, that's an interesting and very strong reaction. I didn't have that reaction to it. I thought the first episode, I think in the first episode, and these are literally, I think it's like 2 minutes of animation per episode.
The whole thing's five.
Yeah. I watched all that was available. I watched all four. Didn't think it was, I mean, I had sort of the same reaction you did at first. I was like, wow, this is like the hackiest hack thing I've ever seen. Like, really? The joke for Italy is that he says pasta all the time? Like, oh, come on. Like, really? And then as it went on, I sort of caught the appeal of it in a certain weird way. I assume you did not watch past the first one.
No. I watched the first two and a half before I decided that it was either this or, you know, reach for the gun.
Right. Did you get to the point where they introduced the Japan character?
No.
Okay. He had the only laugh line that made me laugh. Basically, they're having a bunch of negotiations, and he says, basically, I'm going to sit here in the back and nod while everyone else has negotiations, and then say no to everything when this is over.
Okay, that's funny.
Which is funny. And that's when I suddenly said, oh, okay, well, this is a silly little goofy confection that is literally nothing more than simplistic, goofy jokes about stereotypes based on countries. It is utterly light and fluffy and pointless. But I think it is kind of cute, and it's pretty harmless. And to be frank, like watching through those four, I was kind of fascinated by it, just because you don't see anime that even gets anywhere near this kind of subject matter ever. It's kind of like, I likened it to like if there was like a gag anime about the 2008 election, and the whole joke was John McCain wandering around going, I'm old. Like, there's absolutely no substance to it. They're not saying anything. It's just easy jokes based on stereotypes. And so,
well, what is the value of that?
I'm not saying it has value. I'm just saying I think it's fairly harmless, and I think kind of fascinating. Like, I'm curious to see the lazy-ass personifications of other countries. Like, what's the easy joke they're going to have for Lithuania? You know, like, stuff like that. I don't know. I didn't think it anywhere near as bad or as sinister as you did. I'm kind of happy it's coming out here. I think it probably will get covered by quirky press because it's so weird the way it is. Like, it's a comedy based on, like you said, Japanese racism. Which, that's very unique. You don't see that every day. So, I give it a
pass.
This
isn't even, like, Japanese racism, like, the sort of, like, you know, the Sho Aikawa racism, the Angel Cop racism. This is Japanese racism, like, as would be done by Shibuya teenagers who have never opened a newspaper in their lives.
Yeah, I guess so. And I guess I don't find that quite as offensive or as horrible as you do.
I will not apologize for finding stupid people offensive.
Yeah, well, I think you're probably going a little too far saying it's only for morons. I don't think you're doing yourself any favors by saying that.
I'm not saying it's only for morons. I'm saying I don't understand what smart people can take away from it.
2 minutes of silly goofiness? I mean, that's it. Like,
yeah, I could just, you know, I could just read some 4chan postings and have a better laugh than this. I don't get it. I obviously don't get it on any level.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, like, I thirst for things I've never seen before, and this is one of them. And so I give it a pass. I don't know. You know, actually, that's probably not true. Once the DVDs come out, I'll probably get through it. You know, until it gets old. I can see this getting really old. But the fact of the matter is, this is a total of, what, 7 minutes of animation? So, you know, I can imagine, you know, 10 episodes in, I'll be like, all right, I can only take so much of this. But I don't know. I didn't have the same reaction you did.
It's, you know, it's mind candy. And I don't know. I think I probably find it offensive somewhere along the line that such, you know, important, nuanced things are being diluted to such an extent. And that's all that a large percentage of people will ever get out of it.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And that's commoditized now. As Hey Talia is part of the commoditization of oversimplifying important issues.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Like, America as a whole is so obsessed with World War II that, you know, we have an entire channel that's just about World War II. So I don't necessarily think bringing something like this over is going to, you know, poison the youth or anything like that.
No. I'm not saying it's anything that sinister. I'm just saying it's more of a symptom than you know, a poison.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it occurred to me that, you know, this could potentially encourage, you know, its teenage fans to actually learn about world history, but maybe not. You know.
I highly doubt that. I highly doubt that.
Yeah, you're probably right. But the potential's there, I guess. Well, anyway, that's more than anybody really should spend time talking about that show. We've spent more time talking about it than there are episodes available in terms of length.
That is true.
So before we get to the guest, I just want to mention some exciting editorial things that are happening on the site. We just launched today, by the time you hear this, it's up, Jason Thompson's House of 1,000 Manga, which is basically buried treasure for manga.
I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, he did the first one, it's Rose of Versailles, and of course, there's in true fashion, there's already a, this isn't buried kind of comment in the forums.
Welcome to my hell, Jason.
Yeah.
Welcome.
But, yeah, that'll be a weekly, so every Thursday that'll go up. We just brought on Mike Toole to do the Mike Toole Show. That's what we're going to call it. It's going to be every other biweekly, every other Sunday, opposite Astro Toy. We'll have that. And I'm really happy to have Mike writing for us. Like, that's really exciting. And in terms of what it's going to be about, well, I just said, Mike, do your thing. You don't hire him and then tell him what to write.
Yeah, I've been angling to get Mike on the team for, God, better part of a decade, it feels like.
Yeah. And now he's finally writing for us. So that's great. And then first week of June, we're launching Brian Ruh's column called Brain Diving, obviously after Ghost in the Shell. And it'll be about, you know, usual. We talked about it when we had him on the show. So all that is happening. We're going to have a pretty kick-ass summer, I think. Like,
we are collecting all of the great anime writers as if they were Pokemon.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Until the budget runs out. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, and even before we get to the guest, briefly, on the last show, we were talking about the importance of sharing information and stuff. And we got a couple of questions about video scan and why we can't share video scan information. Care to explain?
Right. Well, what video scan is basically a big database. And to access the database, I think it's an annual subscription of $70,000 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Needless to say, we can't afford that. Needless to say, most of the anime companies can't even afford that. When we were at CPM, we couldn't afford it. We literally were leeching off of Warner Distribution subscription. So that was that's video scan, and the numbers themselves are copyrighted. Like, it's more or less a big Excel sheet with every known SKU that was ever released. And, yeah, all those numbers are copyrighted, so you can't just cut and paste them into an article. So, you know, we maybe should try to figure out how to make an arrangement, but I'm not sure that's going to be possible.
It's one of those situations. They've set it up so that if you can afford a subscription, you don't want to jeopardize it by publishing copyrighted information elsewhere, and you don't really want to share that subscription with anybody else. So, right. You know, it's not a situation where, unless there's an otaku out there with $70,000 who, I guess, wants to get in trouble for publishing copyrighted information, you know, he can have one shot at it. and that's it. But you got to have the 70 grand.
It's really valuable data. I mean, one of the columns is sales since 2000.
Right.
And that's really helpful. But on the other hand, it doesn't track any online sales, and it doesn't track Walmart.
Right, which accounts for something like 30%.
And for some titles, 100%.
Yeah.
So it's not going to give you a really clear, accurate depiction anyway.
Yeah, so that's why there's no video scan numbers available. It's not public information, basically, and can't be shared. And that's an organization that they will go after you. I don't think that's... It's not one of these cases where it's a toothless corporation just saying, please don't share our data. Like, they will bring the hammer down on your ass if you're fucking around with it. So... for any trolls out there who think they're going to save the day by fucking with VideoScan, don't. You will regret it.
How many trolls have $70,000 to throw around?
You never know. There's maybe some really immature 35-year-old entrepreneur out there.
I have to say, some friends of mine that, you know, got laid off from various anime companies kept their VideoScan login data.
Yeah.
And we had a good old time going through the numbers. That has long since gotten cut off, so we barely even hear video scan numbers anymore.
Yeah, my friends that would occasionally share them with me do not work at their respective companies anymore, not because of that, just because of the shitty economy and the company's going downhill. So my sources of information for video scan have kind of dropped away. I still hear it every now and then. Every now and then I'll get some numbers.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Funimation still has video scan, but maybe through Navarre.
Yeah, probably. I wouldn't doubt it. That would be a valuable tool for them, I'm sure. Okay, so let's go ahead and bring on the guest. Okay, so we are back, and our guest is CEO of Bangzoom Entertainment and controversial anime blogger Eric Sherman. Thank you for being with us.
Absolutely, it's a pleasure to be here with you guys. Thanks for coming into the studio.
And you know, thanks for hosting us in your lovely recording space.
Yeah,
this is
the best the podcast sounded in years. No sirens in the background.
yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you really won't hear any sirens in here.
So. For the listeners that, for whatever reason, are not familiar with your company, give us a short history. You know, what do you do?
Okay, yeah, well, that's a great question. We are, as far as anime is concerned, we're a dubbing studio.
Right.
So distributors come to us and give us the anime in Japanese, and we localize it, which is another word for dubbing, basically, and subtitling. And give it back to them so that they can release it how they see fit.
Right. So what are your like biggest titles?
I think we're very well known for Rurouni Kenshin.
Right.
It's one of my favorites. And Samurai Champloo, Witch Hunter Robin. Mm-hmm. It's a few of them.
Right. So.
Oh, Gurren Lagann is a recent one.
So you must have been disappointed with Aniplex's announcement.
Yeah. You know. Well, you mean with just releasing it subtitled?
Yeah.
No, it's okay.
You sure?
Yeah.
That blog came out pretty quick after that announcement.
No, it didn't have anything to do with that, believe it or not.
So we'll just cut to the chase here. The big reason we're talking to you today, you do fascinating work here, and of course we're interested in that, but you posted a blog entry basically saying anime is dead, effectively, and it made anime fandom... fucking explode. Like, mm-hmm. I have never seen...
We can say the F word.
Drop
as many as you want.
Drop them all you like. Just blow up. I have not seen
an atomic bomb drop like that in Anime Fandom in a long time. Literally 64 or 5 pages of responses just on our forums.
Mm-hmm. So far.
So far. And it's still going.
It's still going. I know. I know.
I blame you for this.
Yeah.
Entirely.
Well, go ahead. Blame me. It seems like everybody else is right now. So I can take it. Thank you.
So now's your chance. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, first of all, yeah. Okay, the title was Anime Rest in Peace. But what I said is that anime is going to die unless there are changes that come about. And what I'm very happy about is how much discourse is going on, how much people are really talking about the situation. I'm not so happy about some of the negative stuff I'm reading, to put it mildly, but I'm really, really, you know, it's all necessary stuff. It's really important that we talk about the state of the anime industry. Somebody needs to be talking about it. I'm the only one, it seems, that was stupid enough to stick his neck out to say some things that needed to be said.
Didn't seem like there was a dearth of conversation about the anime industry.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. As a matter of fact, like, our forums are plagued with nonstop speculation about the health of the industry. But someone like you, and you know, this Bang Zoom is a prominent studio, and you're the owner of it. And so,
that's what I mean.
You know, you coming out and saying we're in deep shit is different from just any old blogger. But
I'm talking about. Yeah, just from an industry, someone who's in the industry to come out and say it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. From our perspective, or the way we interpreted your remarks, it seemed like you were saying that because Bang Zoom is having trouble, that means anime as an art form, as a medium, is in serious, serious danger. And I just want you to clarify, is that what you meant, or what did you mean?
Well, that's interesting that you put it that way. Because that's not what I mean. In fact, how can I say this without coming across callous? We're doing really well.
Right.
Our studio is doing really well. Last year was hell. I mean, I was worried about the health of our studio or the sustainability. But this year we're actually doing great. I see the economy slowly stabilizing somewhat. We're doing really well, but that's because we're not doing so much anime right now. And that saddens me a lot, but that's the way it is. And so I wasn't coming out and saying, to answer your question, I wasn't saying Bang Zoom's doing so bad, that's why the anime industry is hurting. It's just
so the phrase, we won't be able to dub anime for you anymore, doesn't mean we're going away. That means I'm going to have to, you know, do more live-action ADR, more video games, and just completely ignore all of my efforts on the anime front.
Pretty close. The only thing I would say differently is that it's not that I'm going to ignore it. It's just that nobody will be coming to us to ask us to dub it because they won't be able to afford to dub it.
Right.
The studios that are releasing dubs just won't be doing them anymore. That's what I meant. I did not mean that we're going to... It wasn't meant as a threat. You know, if you don't stop this piracy, you know, shit, we're going to stop doing anime. We're going to get out of the industry. That's not what I meant at all. And I'm not going to turn my back on anime. I never would. But we won't be able to do it anymore because there won't be anything to do.
So it sounds like the concern is there's so little money in the industry that you just like can't even bother with it. Like you're the prices they're lowballing you so much that it's not worth your time. It sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's not even that that we're getting lowballed. You know, it's that the companies are like Aniplex is making a decision to not even bother trying to dub it.
And they didn't even approach
us. They said, well, we're just not, you know, there's just no budget for it. There's no market for it. There's no market to support it. You know, we can't make money on it. I was talking to the president of Media Blasters earlier this afternoon, and he said, you know, anime, it's already getting there, but it's becoming a hobby industry now. It's just, you know, kids that dub it the second it comes out in Japan. And it's so diluted now that he can't make money. Enough money to justify dubbing stuff. Although he's coming out with some new dubs.
Yeah, we were talking about that on the show last week, actually. We just had someone from Media Blasters on talking about the shows that they're going to dub, and it's obvious that those are the titles that will sell.
Right. Yeah.
Boobs and Samurai.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And you're getting boobs, as I believe. Are you getting boobs? Oh, no, you're getting Club to Death Angel.
We're doing Dokuro-chan.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I look forward to dubbing that.
Yeah, we're it's a really cool show.
So, let's say year over year, compared to 2007, 2008, how much did your anime dub production drop in 2009?
percentages.
And into this year, just a rough idea.
It's just a rough, I mean, well, let me just put it this way. Let me just go back like 2 years ago, if you don't mind. Anime was, at that point, maybe 75, maybe 80% of our work was anime. And right now, it's about 10%.
Oh, jeez.
So that's how dramatic.
So you're getting almost nothing.
There's really very little stuff to do. I mean, we're working on How to He right now. We have another big title that I can't talk about, but we'll hopefully soon be able to. We're doing a few things for Media Blasters. And a really great title for Viz, which is Vampire Knight. And right now, that's about it that's happening for anime here. And 2 years ago, I would be able to list 20 titles that we're working on.
Wow.
And there's some valid and good reasons for that. Right. You know, there was way too much crap coming out.
Yes,
I'm
there was.
First to admit that. But we're a dubbing studio. Someone comes to me and says, hey, will you dub our show? We're going to do the best damn job we can to dub it. It's not up to me to say, well, I don't think that should be released in the U.S. or that's derivative shit. I'm not going to touch it. That's not my decision. I'm going to do the best job we can and hope that it gets a good release.
Right. So what do you think the solutions are?
If I had the solutions, I would have written that rather than stirred up the pot. I do think that we will come up with some solutions. I think that some people actually gave some really interesting ideas in their responses to my post. Mm-hmm. Some things I thought made a lot of sense. I think price point is a really big problem. I think anime is way too expensive. There are some reasons for it, you know, which I know you guys know about. You know the reasons why anime is expensive. You know, some of it can't be helped. We just have to kind of support it as best we can, do the best we can with those prices. But,
So if you had your druthers, based on, like, your catalog, the titles that sold best for you, the stuff that was most popular, what's not coming out anymore that you think we need more of, that you would want to work on?
Titles that aren't coming out anymore?
In terms of what's being produced in Japan, because that is an issue here. What's being produced in Japan, like, surely, like, you and your staff.
Moe versus stuff like that.
Does it even matter? Are you seeing from a production side, like, you know, the stuff that comes in, you're not seeing a lot of samurai action shows. You're not seeing a lot of stuff that you know, like, surely you guys have a concept of what Americans like because that's your business.
You know, I think the reason I was confused by your question at first, it's a good question, but I think for me, I just like a good story. It doesn't really matter what the genre is or the setting or if it's yaoi or what, you know, if it's a great, compelling story and great characters, then I dig it. And that's it for me. So I think what needs to happen and what's going to be a result of a lot of this, a lot of the pain that's happening, people are experiencing right now, is that maybe they'll be more creative. There'll be less stuff, but maybe there'll be some better stuff that comes out.
Right. Now,
is that a cop out?
Yeah, no, that's fine. you are known, at least in the circles that we run in, for coming up with, let's say, creative cost-cutting ways to keep doing anime dubs. We've heard any number of stories about the kind of things that have happened here. Are you still pursuing those angles? Are you still trying the... Because I mean, we've heard stories about you guys undercutting prices on everybody else in the industry. And I don't know if there's truth to that or what.
I don't think there isn't truth to that. I just have to say we really, I don't even know. We're not privy to what other studio budgets are. So I'm not, and then we don't try to come in with the lowest bid. In fact, I think if you talk to our clients, meaning at this point, Bandai or Viz or Media Blasters, we're not known as the lowest price studio.
Okay.
So
who is?
I don't know.
Are they in Shanghai?
No comment to that one. I don't know. But no, we're not known for that. Although I know there was some in the industry, there was some concern that we were bringing in new talent, inexperienced actors that we could pay less. And I think that, I don't know if that's what you're referring to at all.
One of the stories that floats around, yeah, is that you guys were basically, they would take your voice acting class and you'd offer them peanuts to come in and run through dubs. Specifically, they were talking about, I believe, Nanoha and Familiar of Zero, I think, were the two that everybody bandied about as, oh, they basically got the interns to dub this for free. And that's how they got it out. So you're saying that's not true.
No, it's not true at all. There were a lot of professional voice actors on that. Although that wasn't really a Bang Zoom project. It was a studio that was using our studio. I mean, another company that was using... Tony Oliver brought somebody in to do that.
From the voice acting classes? So it is true.
No. But I don't even know. I mean, I think there might have been somebody that was... Maybe there were a couple. And I'm sorry, I don't have the details, but I don't think there were a lot of people from the voice acting classes in that particular show. There have been people found from the voice acting classes. I know one went on to the voice of Barbie from Mattel, which is kind of
really?
Cool. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of neat. But I just want to... Okay, let's talk about that. Because when a voice actor is starting out in the business and they're just coming in, and they have had no experience, and they're going up against a role that Johnny Bosch, you know, otherwise might get or something. I don't think that they should or can be expected to get paid exactly what Johnny Bosch would get paid or Wendy Lee would get paid. So I think it's just natural that there's kind of a pay scale and a natural development to that. I know Christina V started out because we found her at Anime Expo, and she started out making less and gradually worked her way up where she's making the same amount or more than other voice actors.
Is she the one that, she's in the new Haruhi dub, right?
She's not. There was talk about, she's in the ASOS Brigade, okay, which is the Bandai
promotional thing.
But she's not actually in the dub.
Okay, now, you guys also do, aside from the anime dubs, you guys do some creative stuff on your own. You do anime TV with Johnny Young Bosch, and you do these Adventures in Voice Acting classes. Now, are those revenue generators? Do they bring money into the studio?
Anime TV doesn't generate anything.
Right.
We hope one day it will. It's on Rev 3.
Mm.
It's revision3.com. They do Dignation and Texzilla, and okay, so Anime TV is now one of their shows. But so it's on there, and but we don't make a penny or haven't made a penny so far. So hopefully maybe one day it will. The voice acting workshop, basically it does generate some revenue. Mainly, it covers the cost of the teacher and some of the overhead of the rent of the studio. Mm-hmm. That's about it. It doesn't cover anything more than that. So there is a little bit of revenue. That's about it. It's not a huge moneymaker. It's something we like to do.
And how did that Adventures in Voice Acting DVD do for you? Did that do well? How did that do? There's a lot of stories about that too, floating around.
Right. Well. Oh, really? Stories.
It would have.
I think done well if it had. You know, if it hadn't been pirated quite as much as it was.
Was it heavily pirated?
Heavily. Yeah. The amount of downloads way. I mean, like astronomically more than the amount of people who bought it. I'm going to be honest with
you. In the anime business, you don't say.
What do you know? Which is probably part of what, you know, my whole motivation for this, you know, just seeing it firsthand and being affected by it. We're still $30,000 in the hole on the video, on the documentary, and that's 2 years after since it's been released. And I know for a fact because I just talked about it with our accountant.
Okay.
did it get real distribution, or were you just selling it at cons?
We were...
And to write stuff?
That's all we were doing up till now. It just got picked up by an educational distributor, and they're kind of repurposing it for schools and colleges, libraries, things like that, which is nice.
Right.
That's originally what we had intended it to be, so it's really great that it's finally getting out there.
So you mentioned that, you know, even that was heavily pirated, and I think one of the things that set off the fandom was in your blog post, you specifically blamed piracy as being pretty much the sole problem with the anime industry. That if that weren't happening, people would be buying stuff. Do you stand by that? Is that the thrust of your argument? That's the problem, is piracy?
Well, I think that is one of the biggest problems. It's a problem that fans can do something about, that they are actually in control of and can be somewhat empowered to do something about. Is it the only problem with the anime industry? No, of course not. I mean, there's a lot of other things going on, and I couldn't list every single thing in my blog. Maybe I could have softened it somewhat. I think I had my reasons for coming on somewhat strongly. One of the reasons if we're going to talk about it, I think we already mentioned this, but quality of the content coming out, you know, some of the anime just being derivative, and we've seen that story. How many times are we going to see that same thing, you know, in different versions? I know you guys know all about that. Price point, I think it just is expensive and really hard on the wallet, and during when the economy being what it is, it's been really hard. I think there's a whole bunch of issues all at play. But
the big one's piracy.
I think one of the biggest ones that we can do something about here is piracy.
Now, I think that notion alone that you guys can do something about this pissed people off, which, of course, that's going to piss off the heavily entitled kids that really, honestly, truly believe they are entitled to free animation, and that's their birthright or whatever is free cartoons.
Well, I get that. I mean, one thing that I really understand from this whole experience and seeing what people have to say to me is that absolutely the internet. Let me say that I believe in an open internet. It needs to be that way, and I will fight to protect the openness of the internet. But I really get the sense that people feel that everything on the internet should be free, and that it should just be everybody's right to pick up whatever you can from the internet. I was thinking about it, you know, on my drive into the studio today. If I was walking down the Hollywood Way here and I saw a DVD on the sidewalk, you know, would I pick it up, or would I try to find its owner, or what would I do with that DVD? Or a $20 bill, you know? What do you do when it's right there in front of you? So that's really what it is. So I think it's a little different. What I said in my blog was, you know, would you go into the supermarket and walk out with some Swiss cheese under your coat? I think maybe I was wrong when I said that. It's a little different. I think there are other ways to look at this.
Yeah, well, the chief one being that the grocery store doesn't wheel the pallet of cheese out to the parking lot and put a big sign on it that says free and then complain when people take it.
Right. I think better would be to say the stock boy or somebody who works in the supermarket doesn't go out behind the supermarket and here's some Swiss cheese, come get the Swiss cheese. Because right. Then I think you'd have a lot of people that come and take that Swiss cheese. Yeah. And I think the stock boy, whoever was doing it, also would need to be controlled by the supermarket. And that's not happening. There are no controls being placed on anything that's going on right now.
So do you personally think that more enforcement is needed?
I think that there should be some enforcement of piracy. I think that when I'm talking, and I really want to be clear, I'm not coming down on fan subbers. That's not my purpose. I didn't even mention fan subbing in my piece. I'm not talking about that right now whatsoever. I'm just talking about ripping a DVD that's been released, like Haruhi, you know, that was ripped right away and put up all over
people ripping the U.S. release.
An official U.S. release and they just want to get the dub and they don't want to have to pay for it. And so they're going, and people are putting it up there. So probably, you know, there needs to be some sort of enforcement there.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a really good distinction to make, because oftentimes when we talk about piracy, and I know you and I both do this,
right,
we'll just lump it all in together. I didn't even think about that. Like people ripping R1 DVDs. Someone bought it to rip it. You know, that's sort of the attitude. But it's like we just sort of lump everything in together. But I don't think people really know that that's a big problem, because
I see torrents of dubs everywhere.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That is all I'm talking about. And I probably should have said this right at the beginning of our discussion, because it's one of the biggest meatiest parts for me that I wanted to talk about today, is that I really want to draw a distinction. I wasn't coming down on fan subbers. To me, believe it or not, and I'm not saying I'm promoting fan subbing, like actively promoting it, but at the same time, I feel like it's always worked very harmoniously with the anime industry. I think that for the most part, fan subbers are respectful, and there's kind of an unstated, you know, there's unstated laws about when you take it down or when you put them up. And look, if something comes out in Japan and it's going to be a while, and they take it and put it up and subtitle it in 5 different languages, does that hurt the anime industry? I don't know. I think it helps to actually promote it.
Well, you used to anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's just a never-ending torrent of everything.
Well, that's the problem. That's what I'm talking about.
You know, so do you think one of the issues that people talk about with dubs specifically is there's a speed problem. Anime fans want the show 2 seconds or during while it's airing in Japan. They want it when it's airing in Japan, and they'll know when it's airing in Japan. You can't do that with a dub. Is there any way to speed up production on dubs? Or is it, do you lose the quality? Is it just too much of a quality risk? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, conceivably, say like the new Haruhi movie, which opened in Japan like a month ago, 2 months ago. Would there have even been a way for them to get that film to you to be dubbed and ready for production here, you know, really, really, really quick so that you don't have to deal with the real problems of piracy? Because a lot of the fan subbing just comes from a desire for speed. Mm-hmm. They just want it right now. But you can't get dubs right now. You get dubs 2 years down the road.
Yeah.
Is there any way to speed that up?
I know that there are ways to speed it up. I think it's really difficult.
Yeah.
I also think there are concerns in Japan about having it come out too quickly in other areas where they can get it a lot cheaper because it's so much more expensive. The price point is so much higher in Japan. So they actually trying to protect that, which is probably a mistake,
yeah.
But that's what they're doing. That's not that's not something I condone, but I see that as being an issue. So if they could get us the materials a lot quicker, how about this? At the same time as they're voicing it in Japanese, if they could get us the product at that time, the content, and we could dub it here at the same exact time, you could theoretically simultaneously release it. The only thing is we really need it in Japanese so that we can work with the Japanese. The way we work here is we really rely on that Japanese track. You know, we have to listen to it because that's how we're being, we live by that. You know,
right.
We can't just have the English voice actors, English-speaking voice actors say whatever they want and however
right.
they want to say
yeah.
it, you know?
Yeah, you need the script. Yeah.
We need the script, but we also need the performances from right. Japan because it really dictates how we dub it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be dubbed.
But that's an interesting thing. One thing to note about Bang Zoom in particular is that your dubs are much more literal. They're much more faithful to the original script, whereas like someone like Funimation, they do their quote-unquote reversioning, where they pretty much rewrite it. Is that a personal philosophy? In order to make the English flow better, I mean, what sounds better to you? What do you think about that?
I want to be careful how I phrase this because we're definitely very, very conscious and aware, and it is important to us to be faithful. There are some titles, though, that I think we've purposefully gotten away from the original translation and wanted to localize it more and make it more palatable or entertaining to a Western audience. So I think it's a case by case. But on the whole, it's definitely been our direction to stay faithful. Because, like I said, we are bilingual. Our vice president went to the School of Broadcasting in Japan, you know, the top school, and her whole background is in audio and dialogue. And so, we come from that school. Also, I'm a filmmaker by trade, and dialogue is very important, and I really want it to be smooth, and I want the audience to forget that it's dubbed, you know, that mm-hmm. I want them to be thinking of that, like it should really feel like it's original in English. So we're kind of constantly battling that here at the studio.
What changes have you noticed in dub fans over the years? Because you guys are really involved with the fans. Like, you guys go to conventions, you have these big panels, you seem to really connect with your fans.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed any drastic or significant changes in fandom, specifically dub fans, over the last couple of years?
Maybe that fans on the whole, like the group of fans are getting younger. It seems like there's a whole bunch of younger kids into anime than before. It was more an adult, you know, college kids and older.
Yeah.
And now I feel like a lot of the people who wrote responses to my post were like 15 years old.
Yeah.
You know, that's the sense I got. And when I realized that just a couple days ago, I thought, well, geez, you know, that kind of explains a lot, because when we were doing Magic Knight Ray Earth, these kids were 5 years old and they didn't realize, you know, that
I'm old.
I know, but it's a blink of an eye for me. It's just like yesterday that we were doing Kenshin, and that was really, you know, like 9 years ago at this point. So it's crazy how time goes so fast. But I think that the kids that age, kids about 15, 14, right now, who are watching anime, don't realize how bad or what was going on before. Studios like ours and Zero Limit Animes, you know, came into the picture. The dubs were really like Godzilla style dubs. They were not necessarily all great.
Right. Justin, I think, would disagree with that.
Oh, really?
Sometimes.
You're a fan of older dubs.
Well, it depends on which.
That's true.
What's one of your favorite dubs?
Favorite old dubs?
Favorite old dubs.
I really like some of the streamlined dirty pairs, and I really like about half of the stuff that Manga UK did in the early part of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like Heroic Legend of Arslan was fantastic.
I'll
have to check that out.
Good stuff.
How about current dubs? Like in the last 10 years?
I really liked Funimation's dub of Big Windup. The localization on that was done really well. It really sounded like teenagers talking, and that's still kind of rare in dubs, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They don't sound like teenagers ever. They always have perfect enunciation. They always have, you know, perfect grammar. They never call each other bitch.
That's true. Let's use the bitch word more.
Yes. If I see Dokuro-chan and suddenly everyone's bitch, I will take credit for that.
So moving forward, like, what does 2011 look like? Do you think that this trend is just going to keep going down and you only get maybe like 4 anime projects a year? Because you mentioned you were working on at least 4 or 5 things right now, which sounds like probably a lot to anyone listening, but isn't a lot coming from where you came from, you know, based on your history. So, I mean,
I'm hoping that things do stabilize, continue to stabilize, and that's where we are with maybe 4 or 5 a year, because hopefully they'll be really high-quality projects.
Right.
And that would be okay right now. It could go down. It could be completely gone by this time next year, which is, you know, one possible prediction. I don't see right now from where we're sitting in the studio it increasing too much, though.
And when you say completely gone, you mean Bang Zoom working on anime, not the industry as a whole or anything like that, right?
Yeah, I don't mean that, you know, anime will stop being produced completely, but it'll be a lot harder to find. It will not be in the mainstream as much, so it won't be dubbed nearly as much.
Before we get to the long list of Twitter questions, anything you want to plug?
I have nothing to plug. I hope that I would love it, though, if fans would support Vampire Knight and Haruhi and buy it to the best of their abilities. People who can should go out and buy it and tell their friends to buy it. Not that it has any direct relationship to us. We don't profit from directly, but I know.
You get your fee and then that's
We get our fee and then it's a one-time fee. We get a budget to dub it and they're gone. Like whether the series does well or not, whether they make any money or not, it's over. But I know that producers of Bandai have all told me that they have everything riding on Haruhi and the Haruhi-chan and the Haruhi movie and one other title this year. And if those don't do well, that's it.
Wow. Well, that'll be of interest to our listeners.
I just saw our forum explode.
Yep.
Boom!
Yeah, thanks a lot. You're not even the guy that has to deal with those people.
What do you got for me on Twitter here?
Okay.
Come on.
From Shintaku, a lot of older and more hardcore fans don't seem to care about dubs as it seems to westernize the product. Do you think that that's true?
I don't necessarily think that's true. I think some of the older fans really like a dub if it's good.
Right.
And like we talked about before, it doesn't always have to westernize if you're careful, if you know what you're doing.
Right.
And sometimes westernizing isn't so bad.
I think at this point, older fans like dubs more than the kids, like the 15-year-olds.
It's so hard to place it because, you know, you go to the cons and they're all the 15-year-old kids screaming over voice actors.
It's true.
Yeah. It's so hard to figure it out, isn't it?
I don't know who's watching what anymore. All the old rules don't apply.
I mean, the whole, you know, I was once in at Anime Expo, there was a discussion, you know, subs versus dubs, and people got really excited about that. And at this point, you know, I don't really know what's going on.
So long as it's still coming out, I think.
I can say, though, that, you know, from what I hear, that dubs still seem to outsell, if they can measure it, 10 to 1, subs 10 to 1. So. Wow.
How do you tell that?
I don't know.
They're always together if they both exist.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just going by the old VHS model.
Possibly.
Well, it's possible they're comparing sales of titles that do have a dub to titles that don't have a dub.
Mm-hmm.
Possible. So, although that, well.
Compare Sentai's sales to
Funimation's. Yeah.
Which, of course, that's going to be completely disproportionate.
Yeah.
Funimation owns 40% of the industry. Okay, from Andre Paplu, how do you feel about the overall mood of fandom? Have the maniacs taken over the asylum?
I don't know. No, I don't think that it's all a bunch of crazy fans. I think is that what the question was?
Yeah.
Okay. I just think that people are very passionate about it.
Right. So you don't think that the super hardcore, crazy, like online misanthrope, you know, entitlement kids have completely taken over fandom?
Well, they're the loudest.
Yeah,
that's all.
They certainly are.
And they always have been. I mean, you don't get much of the fans saying how great this was or how lovely this is. You just get people who complain. So I sort of become accustomed to that.
I've heard a lot of stories of like people at the various companies, and I got this too when I was at CPM, people sending these long, angry screeds of how pointing out everywhere where you didn't adhere completely fealty to the dub or to the original Japanese. Do you get those?
Not so much anymore, actually.
Anymore. So
I think that's changed. Yeah. Where people.
You used to.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, they go frame by frame, and everything that's been changed, even the slightest amount, they bring it to your attention.
You should get a hobby. Or a different hobby.
A different hobby.
At time code, 01122, you missed lip flap.
Okay, we got a bunch from this guy. Okay. How long does the average Bang Zoom anime dub take to produce?
About a week per episode.
Per episode.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So about half a year for 26 episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite show that you worked on?
I have so many, but just because we're sitting in the studio where we did all the episodes of Samurai Champloo, right now I'm going to say Samurai Champloo.
Okay.
It's one of my all-time favorites. But I'll probably regret saying that later because I'll think of many more.
Yeah. do you feel that anime companies and industry people should be more outspoken about these issues here and in Japan?
No, because if you do, you get flamed. So
was it worth it?
I don't know. Like I said, I'm really, really happy about all the discussion going on. But reading some things like right before I go to bed at midnight, I hope you die and burn in hell. It was really not too nice and not too fun. And,
Yeah, they can get really, really mean.
And then I go up and check on my 4-year-old son and make sure he's sleeping peacefully and think about that.
Okay, from Rhino, might Bang Zoom make a foray into the anime publishing realm?
We could. I mean, if it was the right project or the right kind of circumstances, we could. Nothing's out of the realm of possibility. Now, at the same time, I don't want to become a competitor of our clients.
Right, yeah. You can compete with NIS.
Yeah.
Oh, this next question reminds me. Is this perchance the studio that Heat Guy J was dubbed in?
It is.
Yes!
Right here.
Awesome!
That's another one of my, actually, favorites. Do you guys like that?
Well,
not really.
Yeah. I liked the show. It is a running joke on the show that we mention Heat Guy J in every single episode.
Because it was the biggest bomb in history
Yeah, it came out of the Jenny on show we did where he basically said that is the shiny example of a failure. Like, it just did not do anything for them.
It didn't, and it was so expensive. Yeah. I mean, the licensing fees were so expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Japan. But I don't know have you ever watched it?
Yeah,
we watched it a little.
Because it's actually...
It's not a bad show.
No, it's not a bad
show. It's
pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Although it sure is fun to dish on.
Of course.
And that's your weekly...
I can't blame you.
5-minute Heat Guy J chat. Okay. From Guy Incognito, what was with that polka dot shirt you were wearing during the Conan bit?
Well, it's just a shirt that I've had since I was in college. I got it from a store I used to work at, a used clothing store on Broadway in New York City. And I've had it in my closet all these years, and I figured, if not now, when? When could I ever possibly wear it?
Time to be on National
Come
Network
on.
Broadcast.
Exactly. And I wanted to see what Conan would say.
Speaking of that, we've had someone on the show talk about how that all came about.
Steve was on.
Oh, he was on?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but how did that go for you? That must have been a real thrill.
That was fun. Yeah, of course it was great. When we did I wasn't here. I was in Japan when he came the first time. Mm. The time when he walked around and looked at the bobble breasts.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin Chu gave him a tour. But the second time when Conan came in, he was in a bad mood. So he was sort of like, let's get this thing done. I want to get out of here. Mm. I don't know if he's already feeling stressed out from impending doom or what. But
given when that took place, my guess would be yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is from Kit Kat 80, okay. Is the degree of fidelity to the original translation a directorial decision, or is it decided by your clients?
It comes from the clients first. I mean, they decide that they really want to be faithful or not, and that's really 90% of it.
Okay.
But if they tell you hack and slash, you hack and slash.
If they say, yeah, go to town, like, I want to change this, I want to really... We did something for Viz recently where they said, we really want to make this for the U.S. audience. It doesn't matter what they're saying in Japanese, then you change it.
Hmm.
And that's not Vampire Knight.
Okay.
We already talked about this a little bit, but just for some further clarification, maybe you can actually finally put this to rest.
Hmm.
What can you tell us about the dubs for Nanoha and Familiar Zero?
What do you want to know about the dubs?
I think people just want to know what happened there, because there's a storm of rumor around it. And I guess you mentioned that it's another company that came in and did it, but Tony Oliver works for you.
Yeah, but he's not staff here.
Okay.
And he works at other studios.
Right.
He has a long history of working for other studios, and I don't remember the particular details, because I actually am not... I didn't realize there was such a storm about it. I knew that there was...
I got at least 10 questions about it.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to talk more about it. But so it was just... It was something that came in. It was really, really low budget.
Yeah.
We cast it here. So we brought in the actors. And I think that that's what maybe some people are having a problem with, because we did bring in a bunch of unknowns.
That's because the budget was so low, right?
Yeah. Right. I mean, right. And to me... Okay, I'm remembering now, because this was, 3 years ago at this point? Maybe four? I looked at it as this great opportunity to be able to let people get their feet in the door, people who normally would never be able to get cast in a show because they don't have enough experience. It's like, okay, great, you know, here, give them something that they can really get, a role they can sink their teeth into, but we don't have to use the top cream-of-the-crop actors.
I think the issue is that people see it, people are looking at it through a filter of they think you were exploiting these kids, underpaying them, like way underpaying them, like basically we need the money, we need the commission for this basically, so we're just going to cast a bunch of interns, and you know, I think that's the direction that they're taking it down, a negative road, okay. And you're saying it wasn't necessarily that.
No, it absolutely wasn't that. I looked at it as a great opportunity to give people an opportunity to get into the business. I can say without hesitation that there were no interns that were used on it. Certainly nobody for free. If there was an intern, it might have... Sometimes we do... Okay, we do have interns that work here that live for that moment when we say, hey, we have a couple of incidentals. Would you like to come into the studio and do those? You know, step into the booth?
As there are in any showbiz related.
Right, and we love to let them do that. It's their joy, and I think it's... But it's not... exploitive to do that. I mean,
half
listen.
Of the cheap labor in Hollywood is people who are like dying to get on camera.
Yeah. What you're not admitting is that behind this place is like the mine in Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom. You have it all full of
don't go through
kids
that door right there. Do not open that door. I just can. I mean, if you know me, my dad used to say to me when I was a kid, you know, Eric, you have to be able to, when you put your head on your pillow at night and go to bed, you need to be able to feel good about yourself. It's very important that you need to feel good about the way you live your life. And I live my life that way. I'm so against exploitation of people. I'm so not that person. And I don't know how that...
Which is why you don't do hentai. Do you?
No, we don't.
Okay.
No. I mean, maybe people will hate me for not doing hentai, but I just don't do it.
I don't think anyone hates dubbing people for not wanting to do hentai.
Yeah.
We did do some movies for CPM. that were like sumo vixens and thinking
all the Kay Mizutani stuff.
Yeah, Kay Mizutani. So we did several of those, and there was this one scene where this woman was doing something to a guy, and she was making those sounds, you know, and this other actor walked in and he was like, yeah, good job, yeah, go down. And I just felt so bad for the actress, and that we really tried to avoid doing stuff like that. Listen, I hate to say this, but, and maybe I shouldn't, but this is kind of bothering me a little bit. I think as far as the Nanoha stuff and the rumors and accusations, actors get really protective of their turf, and they get nervous. I think that maybe we're bringing in people that are going to take their jobs, and I think that that's where the rumors came from. I do love most of the actors that we work with very, very dearly, and I don't blame them for it. Yeah, I did say most. I don't blame them for it, but I think that that's maybe where it came from. Because I have, you know, I've had to reassure actors many times, Eric, are you replacing me? Are you bringing other people so that, to take our jobs away? I mean, I have been asked that question, and right. the answer is absolutely not.
Okay. If you say so, no.
Clearly, except for Nanoha.
Yeah.
Except for those two shows where we took
3 years ago.
Yeah.
All right.
Where we brought in interns and didn't pay them anything.
I admit it, you picked up the cast for that in front of Home Depot.
Oh, man, I'm not even going to answer that one.
Okay, from Quark Boy, how do you plan on handling the dubbing of Endless 8, straight or with some gimmicks?
You know what? We really wanted to do gimmicks. We were all set to do gimmicks, and we were, at the end of the day, we were forbidden to do so by the powers that be in Japan. So now we're pretty much straight. There will be some differences and some interesting things to get and pick out from the episode.
So you are actually going through and recording it 8 times?
We're doing it 8 separate times. And sometimes we have to change some of the dialogue because it doesn't fit the flaps. So that'll be really
fun
interesting.
For you.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not
it's
on that production.
It's being recorded right at the door, right?
Next door?
Next door in Studio 1.
Oh, cool.
In Studio 2, it's right there. I don't know if you noticed. Yeah.
All right, from Penguin Truth, is Johnny Yong Bosch your favorite voice actor?
Is he my favorite voice actor?
I think the notion is that he's in everything you do.
Oh, but he's not anymore. He was forced on me when we did Hikaijei, as a matter of fact. Satoshi Fuji, who's a producer at Genion, really liked him from Trigun and wanted him to play the part of, I think it was Claire. And I said, well, I heard from so-and-so that he's really slow and he takes a long time to get the reads right. And I don't know, we don't have that kind of time in the studio to work this out. And he said, no, try him. And we brought him on. And from the moment I first worked with him, I kind of fell in love with everything he did. And I really thought he was good. So he is one of my favorites, yes. But I don't think he's in everything. He was in Edeka 7, but originally that was somebody else, and he replaced this other guy. I guess I can't mention him.
All right. I guess this can be our final question. A lot of people ask this, so I'm just going to paraphrase it. Have you been approached by any streaming companies to do dubs for streaming anime, and do you see that as a future possibility?
I definitely see that as a future possibility, for sure. I think that change is coming. Change is already here, and change is inevitable, and that's a good thing. DVD is not where the future is at all. We've done one project that I'm aware of so far that was strictly for streaming, and that was 5 centimeters per second. It was a redo. So that's the only one that I know of that we did.
Okay, but you see that moving forward? Like, you one day you might be, you know, doing dubs for Crunchyroll or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we've been working with Crunchyroll on some things, and yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, that's about all the time we have. Thank you so much for doing this and sitting in with here and taking the hard questions and being honest with us. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, that's our show. I want to thank Eric Sherman for being our guest this week. As always, remember to subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll see you next week.